I'm Abigail Galvan. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
Supporters of legal abortion have made large investments in Florida.
A pro-life state could turn in November. We explore the abortion amendments in Florida and how the church is working to inform Catholic voters about what is at stake.
The church has spoken very clearly against gender ideology from Pope Francis on.
Analysis on a new report indicates that many Catholic hospitals provided children with gender transition surgeries or hormone therapy.
From the medium Cana roast to the dark Guadalupe roast or decaf Mater Dolorosa, the Meyer family of Colwich, Kansas is supporting pro-life causes through its own blends of coffee. That story ahead.
Those fundamental rights, rights that Adam served his country fighting for, are being restricted, are being limited in the name of the new secular orthodoxy. So the reason that he found himself prosecuted is because of what he was thinking about.
In the United Kingdom, a British Army veteran has been found guilty of silently praying outside of an abortion clinic. In 2022, Adam Smith Connor was praying for his unborn son that died from abortion 2 decades prior. 2 police officers approached him, asked him what he was doing, and informed him he was violating the law. A court found him guilty of silent prayer and ordered him to pay a nearly $12,000 fine. In a press release, Smith Connor said, "Today, the court decided that certain thoughts, silent thoughts, can be illegal in the United Kingdom. That cannot be right. All I did was pray to God in the privacy of my own mind, and yet I stand convicted as a criminal." The Alliance Defending Freedom UK that defended Smith Connor says this is a legal turning point of immense proportions and blasted the neglect of basic freedoms of speech and thought.
This proposition should be called a wolf in sheep's clothing. We cannot allow abortion on demand with no restrictions up to 9 months. And worse, and this is why we need to vote no to Proposition 1.
A big round of applause during the Napa Faith and Business Conference in New York City earlier this week after Auxiliary Bishop Joseph A. Espaillat of the Archdiocese of New York called on Catholics this week to vote no on an abortion measure. The amendment would add abortion as a right in the state's constitution. New York bishops have blasted the amendment that they say would remove all restrictions on abortion and curb parental rights. New York is one of 10 states that will hold a vote on abortion. A new survey finds that abortion has passed inflation as the top election issue for women under 30 since Kamala Harris replaced President Joe Biden on the Democratic ticket. Abortion has been the main talking point for Harris's campaign. The nonprofit Kaiser Family Foundation, known as KFF, reports that 39% of the women under age 30 named abortion as a top issue, followed by inflation at 28%. It is a major shift from an earlier survey over the summer where nearly half of women, some 48%, cited inflation as a top issue and 20% said abortion was a top issue. Continuing our state election coverage this week, we take a closer look at Florida. While the state recovers from 2 major hurricanes, Governor Ron DeSantis signed an executive order authorizing election changes in the hardest hit counties to make it easier to cast ballots. Polling places will be allowed to move locations now if the original site is destroyed. The Secretary of Elections must work to ensure those impacted by the hurricane can vote, including access to vote by mail. Specific training requirements are lifted for poll workers, and the requirement for a signed request to send a vote by mail ballot to a different address is being lifted. However, a voter must still provide their driver license or social security number. Florida voters will be casting ballots on the issue of abortion in November. Currently, Florida's Heartbeat Protection Act protects the life of an unborn after 6 weeks gestation. That law only took effect in May of this year. Voters will decide on Amendment 4, which would establish a right to abortion in the state constitution. It would ensure abortions are legal until a baby is viable. Viability is typically around 23 or 24 weeks. But the language on this ballot leaves viability to be determined by the patient's health care provider.
It would wipe out all the pro-life laws in Florida, very likely. It would eliminate the parental involvement law. There's a very good chance it would require taxpayer funding of abortion through Florida's Medicaid program. And it would also essentially legalize abortion throughout all 9 months of pregnancy.
In order for this amendment to pass, it needs at least 60% of voters in Florida to vote in favor of it. The Florida Office of Election Crimes and Security has opened more than 100 investigations into potentially fraudulent signatures used to get the abortion amendment on the ballot. However, the state law to challenge the validity of amendment signatures has passed, so it is unclear if the amendments can be removed from the ballot. Tammy Fetchy, Associate for Life and Dignity at the Florida Conference of Catholic Bishops, joins us now to talk about what the church is doing to inform voters about this measure. Tammy, how is the Florida Conference of Catholic Bishops working to get the word out to Catholic voters?
Well, you know, the Florida Conference of Catholic Bishops urges all Floridians to stand against the legislation of late-term abortions and to oppose Amendment 4. As a response, the bishops of Florida have issued numerous resources that can be found on the FCCB website, including the bishop's statement on Amendment 4, the parish toolkit with resources for use in parish bulletins and on bulletin boards, fact sheets explaining why Floridians should vote no on Amendment 4, and addressing frequently asked questions about Amendment 4. The bishops have also issued a prayer card because we know how important prayer is in this battle. Along with the bishops have made videos, there are podcasts, columns, and letters from all of the bishops of Florida throughout the seven dioceses. And I also wanted to highlight Dr. Gracie Christie also did a video for us that is now being played in our parishes.
That's incredibly encouraging to see so many efforts being made to educate voters. Now, a New York Times Siena College poll and a Victory Insights poll both indicate that this measure has less than 50% of voter support in Florida. In order to pass, it needs 60% approval. Is that a sign of hope?
Well, although both polls, the Victory Insights and the New York Times Siena College poll, show that there's a support for Amendment 4 ballot initiative is falling well short of the 60% threshold needed for passage, supporters of legal abortion have made large investments in Florida. Now, we should not be that overly confident, because we recently viewed polling from Mason-Dixon Polling and Strategy indicating that 66% of women polled were likely to support Amendment 4. So we want to be very cautious. Mason-Dixon's numbers came 2 weeks after the Victory Insights survey and show that Amendment 4 had enough support to pass. However, you know, there is a large enough share of undecided voters who could still make a pro-life victory happen. You know, we just want to make sure that we're not overly confident and that, you know, our campaign strategies continue to move forward.
That's a good suggestion. And are there concerns that this amendment could impact pro-life pregnancy centers?
You know, right now, you know, Florida's current Heartbeat Protection Act has expanded pro-life protections and provides additional resources for young mothers and families. For the fiscal year of 2024-2025, the state of Florida has invested close to $500,000has invested $456.5 million to support health and development of pregnant women and children and for the Florida Kid Care Program. It's also going to improve access to obstetric care for pregnant women and initiatives for children with development delays. This is also going to expand minority maternal health care programs and telehealth. So we've seen an increase in women using these services like the Florida Pregnancy Care Network. And although there's much work to be done, we are grateful for the laws that have strengthened the social structures that accompany and support pregnant women and families.
That's incredibly encouraging. Thank you so much, Tammy.
Thank you.
In light of this abortion measure, Ave Maria University will be holding a Respect Life rally, urging people to vote no on Amendment 4. The event on October 20th will feature special guests, including the Diocese of Venice, Bishop Duane, several Florida lawmakers, and actor-producer Eduardo Verastegui. The event will conclude with a rosary walk around the campus of the university. The state of Nebraska has dueling abortion initiatives on the ballot this November. EWTN News' Mark Irons traveled to Nebraska to hear what voters there are saying.
This is the first time ever in history that we've had any sort of competing ballot initiatives, let alone on the abortion issue.
Nebraska bishops are asking all voters to protect life by voting for the initiative that has stricter limits on abortion. Mark Irons' full report on the competing Nebraska ballot initiatives will air on EWTN News in Depth Friday at 8 p.m. Be sure to tune in. Don't forget to check out the Catholic News Agency's interactive map on state abortion ballots. Head over to CatholicNewsAgency.com and scroll to the bottom. A hospital in Georgia, instead of the state's pro-life laws, is now being blamed for the death of a woman who took the abortion pill. Amber Thurman's case from 2022 became a national headlines this election season after a news site, ProPublica, and Democratic presidential candidate Kamala Harris blamed Georgia's pro-life laws for her death.
And now we know that at least two women, and those are only the stories we know, here in the state of Georgia, died because of a Trump abortion ban. And we will speak her name, Amber Nicole Thurman.
Thurman went to a hospital after complications from the abortion pill, but the hospital staff allegedly waited 20 hours before performing a DNC to remove the remains of the baby. The family's attorneys, who originally blamed the pro-life laws, is now saying, quote, even under Georgia law, doctors had a duty to act to save Amber.
Every proponent of the Georgia heartbeat law would say that the law itself did not kill Amber Thurman. The Georgia heartbeat law allows for two exceptions that would have applied in this case. One is a medical emergency, which is based on the life of the mother being in jeopardy. And two, you don't have a viable fetus. When Amber Thurman went to the hospital there was no heartbeat to detect. There was no viable fetus. There was no reason for these doctors to have any kind of complication or issue as to what to do next. The law would have allowed them to immediately perform surgery on Ms. Thurman, the DNC procedure, and save her life.
Lawyers for Amber Thurman's family say they plan to pursue every legal avenue they can to get justice for Thurman. A day to break the culture of silence surrounding infant and pregnancy loss.
Our Blessed Virgin Mary, Mother of Divine Hope, pray for us.
October 15 is a day to acknowledge the lost lives of little ones and their families. A wave of light mass was held in Houma, Louisiana, on Tuesday. It included a litany of children's names who have passed. Redbird Ministries specializes in providing support for parents who have experienced child loss of any age and circumstance. Visit redbird.love to get more information. We are following a concerning report that Catholic hospitals around the country are providing transgender drugs and surgeries to children, contradicting church teaching. A medical watchdog group called Do No Harm says nearly 150 Catholic hospitals performed gender transition surgeries or provided hormone therapies to children between 2019 and 2023. The report indicates that some 150 children had surgeries to alter their appearance to the opposite sex, and more than 280 children were given puberty blockers or hormone therapies which interfere with the child's natural development. The Catholic Health Association, or CHA, has criticized the Do No Harm report for, quote, irresponsibly presenting claims data without necessary clinical context. CHA did not contradict, however, any of the report's data. Dr. Joseph Meany, senior fellow at the National Catholic Bioethics Center, joins us now to weigh in on this report. Dr. Meany, why do you think so many Catholic hospitals have taken part in these transgender surgeries and hormone therapies?
Yeah, so the report indicated that in the five-year span from 2019 to 2023, that 150 Catholic hospitals were involved in at least one transgender surgery or hormonal intervention. And basically, I think it goes to the lack of supervision and guidelines, that this was all very new, and individuals who were working for Catholic healthcare didn't have necessarily the intervention and the supervision and guidance to tell them that this was not allowed in a Catholic facility.
And could you tell us, what are the current guidelines from the Vatican and other church leaders on healthcare for those suffering from gender dysphoria?
Yeah, I mean, the U.S. bishops are very concerned about this. And so last year in March, they issued a doctrinal note on the moral limits to technological manipulation of the human body. And what they said there was very, very clear. Catholic healthcare services must not perform interventions, whether surgical or chemical, that aim to transform the sexual characteristics of a human body into those of the opposite sex, or take part in the development of such procedures. Also, Dignitas Infinita, a declaration from the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith in April of this year, said that sex change interventions were also against human dignity.
That sounds pretty clear to me. And what do you think needs to happen in order for Catholic hospitals to truly follow the teachings of the Church?
So it's very clear that Pope Francis has condemned gender ideology many occasions, that they basically, Catholic healthcare cannot buy into that ideology. They have to have very clear guidelines that we want to support individuals who have gender dysphoria, help them to recover from that, but we are not going to encourage any kind of sex change, transgender intervention. And so that has to be in the guidelines. It has to be monitored. It has to be kind of just made very clear at all levels of Catholic hospitals that Catholic healthcare does not include transgender interventions.
Thank you, Dr. Meany. And is there anything else you would like to add on this subject?
I think it's very important to say that, you know, there are over 600 Catholic hospitals in the United States, and 150 of them over a five-year span had a handful of these transgender interventions. So it clearly was exceptional. It wasn't like they were leading the charge on this, but it did show that they did not have enough guidance in place, enough supervision, and employees who maybe came from secular institutions to Catholic institutions thought they could do the same thing in Catholic healthcare that they were doing elsewhere. And so it has to be very clear in terms of the ethical and religious directives and elsewhere that this is not allowed. In fact, the bishops last year gave a mandate to the Doctrine Committee to put in transgender explicitly in the ERDs, the ethical and religious directives, to say, you know, this is the guideline, you have to follow this.
Let's hope that this will give more clarity. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Meany.
Oh, you're very welcome.
An update on the controversial so-called suicide pod used by an American woman in Switzerland to end her life in September. Use of the Sarko suicide capsule and all of the 371 active applications to use it have been suspended. The pod requires the user to activate it themselves by pressing a button that floods the capsule with nitrogen. Swiss officials say the pod had not been approved when it was used by the 64-year-old American woman. Several people connected to her death have been arrested. An assisted suicide bill was introduced to Parliament in the United Kingdom on Wednesday. The bill would allow terminally ill adults with 6 months to live or less to end their own lives with the help of a medical professional. Members of Parliament voted against legalizing a similar bill in 2015. Church leaders are speaking out against the measure. Cardinal Vincent Nichols, the Archbishop of Westminster, issued a pastoral letter urging Catholics to pray, take part in debates about it, and warning that a so-called right to die is a slippery slope.
Once this assisted suicide is approved by the law, a key protection of human life falls away. pressure mounts on those who are nearing death, from others or even from themselves, to end their life in order to take away a perceived burden of care from their family, for the avoidance of pain, or for the sake of an inheritance.
The Archdiocese is calling on Catholics to call their representatives to ask them to stop the assisted suicide from being rushed into law. The members of Parliament will vote on it on November 29. An inspiration of faith and perseverance up next. We tell you the keynote speaker at the March for Life.
In marriage prep, our priest talked about how your number one vocation is to get each other to heaven. And so the priorities of life should be God in your prayer life, your spouse, your children, and then your work.
Plus, the work of one married couple that helps build a pro-life culture and how you can take part of that story. And more next. Walks for Life held in Brazil last weekend were a beautiful witness to life. The walks are held in several cities across the country, including Rio de Janeiro, Niterói, and Florianópolis. These walks mark the conclusion of Pro-Life Week designated by the Brazilian Bishops' Conference. In the 2025 March for Life in Washington, D.C., the keynote speaker will be famed surfer Bethany Hamilton. Hamilton's story is one of determination, hope, and incredible faith. At 13 years old, she lost her arm when a 14-foot tiger shark attacked her while she was surfing in her home state of Hawaii. Just a month after the attack, she returned to surfing and 2 years later won her first national title. She is a wife and mother, author, and motivational speaker. We are excited to hear her on the March for Life rally stage in January. EWTN is your home for complete coverage of the March for Life. This year, it will be held on Friday, January 24th. We will bring you on-the-ground reports from the rally and throughout the march, as well as provide analysis from pro-life experts throughout the day. Our coverage begins at 9 a.m. Looking for the right balance of God, family, and work, a couple in Kansas is getting creative to help their family be together more while also supporting expectant mothers. EWTN correspondent Alan Holdren brings us into an OBGYN doctor's home as he and his wife dig deep into what it means to be pro-life.
Big ideas are brewing here in a garage in Colwich, Kansas, near Wichita. OBGYN Dr. Jordan Meyer and his wife Lindsay are looking to support life inside and outside of their family through a new side hustle.
Welcome to Fiat Coffee.
Thanks,
Jordan.
Good to be here.
Thanks, Lindsay. Nice to meet you.
Alan, good to meet you guys.
Want a cup of coffee?
Yeah.
Our first date was at a coffee shop, and when we got engaged, we always dreamed about owning our own coffee shop someday. We just thought maybe that would be, I don't know, when we retire or later in life. So we kind of put that on the back burner. We continued school. And then we became more aware of just the anti-Catholic values of some of the larger coffee distributors. And it was at that time that we really dreamed about specifically a pro-life coffee business.
Our family have a huge Marian devotion. So we took the name Fiat Coffee. And then we've developed and named all of our roasts after significant Marian events or apparitions.
We were giving it out to friends and around our town and having them sample and give us critiques. And
yeah, then we really liked what we made. And we launched the business in October. Sales started to steadily incline. And then around Christmas, they really got busy because it was a new business. People wanted to buy a pretty inexpensive gift or stocking stuffer. And that's when we looked at the business and thought we could expand.
Who was your first customer?
One of her dad's coworkers. So we knew nothing about building a website, but we built a website and we didn't know it worked. And all of a sudden, I was walking down the stairs one day and my phone made a cash register noise. And I was like, we just sold a bag of coffee.
Yeah, so good. Our business really, we're hoping that if it took off, it could allow Jordan to be home with our family more and involved with us more because his job takes him away quite a bit. And so we were hoping that that would give him more of a presence at home and teach our children work ethic.
Yeah, so with the desire to help in the pro-life world, but to also be there for our family. Mm-hmm. And as the business has grown, we've really seen a lot of light of what we think is going to come from it. Mm-hmm. And the ability to work together as a family, it's really unified our marriage. Mm-hmm. We do it together. And we'd like to kind of keep it as a family business. It's been great working together. And I always ask her, I'm not annoying you, am I? No, this is a dream.
The Meyers buy the beans in bulk from fair trade suppliers in Central and South America. Most evenings, Lindsay gets the kids in bed and Jordan starts roasting. They may get as much as 300 pounds roasted a night, 30 pounds at a time.
And what makes it specifically a pro-life business?
One, we donate 20% of our proceeds to pro-life causes. So we've chosen pregnancy centers in Wichita right now. And so every quarter we assess what our proceeds are and then we send them a check for that. And then I think the whole vision of what the business is going to be is how much it can bring us together in the sense of pro-life being more than what's out in the media, but of what is meant of a marriage and what's meant of a family.
You mentioned that you hope that this will bring Jordan here more often. Is the idea then that this could eventually also replace the practice?
We feel like currently right now, if as the business grows, we might have an opportunity to not be maybe on call as much or be gone as much. Because the real tough thing for us is you're eating dinner and all of a sudden you get a phone call and I've got to leave. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty devastating for our kids. Mm-hmm. And so right now we're trying to find the right fit and match to where we don't have to put them in that situation.
So if it can replace some income to help him stay home more, that's really a big driver.
It seems like a difficult decision for you to take a step out of that, but you're doing that for your family because it seems like the healthcare field needs voices like yours.
Yep. My work as a physician is very important, and being a pro-life doctor is very important. But if you read, too, in Humanae Vitae, it talks about being pro-life is helping nourish the life that you have. And so if, for example, I spent every waking hour and hours at night at the hospital, we didn't feel like that was, in a sense, a pro-life from the standpoint of something for our family. Mm-hmm. And so being wholly pro-life, we are fully pro-life in the sense of the dignity of life and marriage, but also the dignity of life and marriage between us and our children.
Good. Well, thank you so much, and cheers, Defia.
Cheers. Thank you.
For the Meyers, each roast supports life and supports their life together. In Colwich, Kansas, Alan Holdren, EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
20% of all of Fiat Coffee's proceeds go to pro-life causes. If you would like to support their mission, visit fiat-coffee.com. That's fiat-coffee.com. That does it for this edition of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Sign up for our newsletter, The Pro-Life Pulse, ewtn.com/pro-life. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.